All right. Thank you and good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So our panel today has four matters on the calendar. This is the third matter set for orals, and then our final matter is set for a non-oral consideration. I see both lawyers present for our third appeal, and so I'll ask the marshal to call the case, and I'll have just a couple of quick comments before we go ahead with the argument.
Now calling case A210745, State of Minnesota versus Darrell Keith Todd.
Great. And I'm sure you're familiar, counsel, with how things proceed. We are going ahead today using remote technology via Zoom to do these proceedings. Our rules remain the same. And so we ask, or I remind you of things that you probably already know. Before you start your argument, please identify yourself as well as the client you represent. These proceedings are being recorded and the audio will be available later, so that helps us track the record. And then keep an eye on the clock. You should see 15 minutes now, and it tends to go quickly. It'll count down. Last, I guess I would just say you've received some instructions about what to do if by any chance our connection is bad or interrupted in any way. And of course, we would deal with that accordingly. So with that, we're ready to hear from counsel for appellants. You can begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, panel. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Kirk Anderson, and I represent the appellant, Darrell Todd, in this matter. I think the case has been pretty fully briefed, but there are some issues that I would like to highlight. The facts of this case are not in dispute. The issue is whether or not law enforcement had the lawful ability to make a warrantless entry onto appellant's property, order him out of his house at gunpoint, force themselves into his home, forcibly remove him from his home, and then place him under arrest. The evidence that was obtained as a result of the officer's actions were later used by law enforcement to apply for a search warrant for appellant's residence where contraband was found. If the evidence that was discovered when they initially detained him and took him out was unlawfully obtained, then the magazine must be suppressed and it cannot be used as a basis to make a probable cause finding for the search warrant of his home. Generally, this court initially will make the determination, is there independent probable cause for the search warrants absent the evidence that was obtained? If there was not, then this court must conduct a de novo review to determine if the evidence was lawfully obtained. In this case, Judge Chu of the district court found that there was exigent circumstances to justify law enforcement's actions because of one, the emergency aid exception, and or the totality of the circumstances test. As stated in my briefs, I believe both of those decisions were in error. First of all, the emergency aid exception, in my opinion, is not applicable to this case at all. The emergency aid exception allows law enforcement to make warrantless entries into homes to render emergency assistance. There was nothing presented to the district court that showed that there was a need for emergency assistance at the time. Every officer that testified specifically admitted they had no idea if there was any connection with the residents and the shooting that occurred in the alleyway a few houses down. There was nothing at all.
Just to clarify, hasn't the Lemieux court in accepting the plethora of case law under the emergency exception already ruled contrary to what you just said to us, meaning that there, unlike here, where it was still part of a fresh investigation, they were okay going to this home in order to just simply investigate. And then they saw the signs of the potential break-in and so forth and had a reasonable basis to enter. But here, it was during the heat of the moment, so to speak, within moments of the officers arriving, and they see this truck excursion with its door open. And as they go to explore that, and that's a couple houses down in the same alley where the deceased body is found. It strikes me that the phrase that you see in the case law, that it would border on derelict of duty if they did not follow up with that. So I guess part of what I'm asking you is, number one, would you agree that it was reasonable for them to investigate first the excursion with the door open two doors down from the deceased body? And then when they see the house, with the door open to investigate that under the emergency exception. What would be wrong about those steps? Are they to ignore all of that?
Your Honor, I would not say ignore all of that. I think that law enforcement, it's one thing. Obviously, there was a homicide that's a serious offense that happened, and they see in the middle of the night that there's a door open. So they find it, you know, curious or suspicious potentially. But they have admitted they did not know if this was connected to the shooting. So for them to simply go and maybe do some investigation is one thing. But I think the officer's actions in this case went beyond a, you know, an investigation, such as like in Lemieux, if Your Honor recalls. Officers were specifically directed to that residence by witnesses, and they went to that for the sole purpose to do what they even described as a knock and talk. They were just going to knock on the door and try to talk to a resident. In this case, they went up to the home. They already had guns drawn, and they didn't knock on the door. They didn't hear anything. They didn't see anything suspicious leading up to the house. You know, had there been blood, you know, droplets, had there been shell casings, had there been other things, all they had seen was that the door was open, and they didn't do anything else that could potentially take additional steps to, you know, I guess, investigate. Once the appellant came around the corner, guns were out, get out of the house, open, put your hands up. It went far beyond what Lemieux did. And if you recall in Lemieux, you know, there was other factors that actually led them into the home. They knocked on the door. They did not get any answer. They saw signs of potential break-in. And even a neighbor said, oh, we heard someone in there before and the music's blaring. So they simply went in at that point. They had a lot more in Lemieux before they went in,
where they did not have that here. Thank you. Just to clarify, Mr. Anderson, then you're agreeing that the initial part of the investigation was reasonable. So I'm assuming by that, you're agreeing that it was reasonable for them to walk up the sidewalk to the back of the house to inquire or to see what they see. So would you agree that that part of the process was a reasonable both investigation and emergency exception? And so from your standpoint, is it that things fell apart unconstitutionally once the door was pushed open? So everything's legal up to that point, and then an illegal seizure occurred after that in your mind versus the entire event?
Well, I think that the initial entry into the back, you know, it's a little, I think Jardine's the case that talks about this, that there's a, you know, implied where officers can walk up and knock on a door. A back door in the middle of the night typically is not the kind of thing that people just allow whoever to come up and knock on the door at that time of night. But in this case, I think the circumstances surrounding it, them just walking up to the back door was not the major factor that led to an unlawful. Because if they walked up the door and just knocked on the door, that's one thing, even with the door being open. I don't think that that would really be the basis to challenge this. But once they're at the door, they're peering in the window, or they're peering in the door, they're pulling their guns out, ordering him out of that's where things went haywire. And then obviously when he tries to close the door and they kick it open and then go in and grab him and pull him out, that goes far beyond a violation of his constitutional rights.
But counsel, what would you have them do in this circumstance, since in all reality, what they want to do is go home to their families? Are you going to expect an officer dealing with the issues here? A recent gunshot that was heard on the city's listening system, an immediate response to that area, dead body in the alley, and the officers testified it was only 30 or 40 feet to that back door where the excursion was parked with the door open with the keys on the running board and the door of the house open. Wouldn't it suggest to you that maybe the person who shot this fellow had escaped to that home in a haste? And so they were dealing with a really dangerous situation. I'm just asking, what would you suggest they do to protect themselves at that point?
Well, Your Honor, I think at that point, there was no threat to the officers. There had not been any sort of noise coming from the house. The appellant did not come around the corner with a firearm. They did not see any, like, again, blood or any other evidence that there was something going on in that house that they needed to be concerned about. I think it was reasonable as, for the officers to go knock on the door, but they didn't even knock on the door. They just went in and guns out, get out of the house, put your hands up. They weren't doing any sort of a initial investigation. They just simply went there saw a door open, and that's all they went for. And when he closes the door, I'm sorry.
I just wanted, before you go too further, and you can finish if you didn't answer Judge Kirk's question, though, I just wanted to clarify, isn't it true? They didn't go into the house until he started shutting the door. So they asked to show his hands. So they're still outside. No one's in the house. And so they show your hands. And that's when things started going bad, because he refused to show his hands, plus started shutting the door. Is your point that officers at that point needed to ignore it?
Well, just simply walk away? Sure. My recollection was is that the officers didn't set foot in the residence, but they did. I think one of them actually had stuck his head into the hallway of the doorway. So he had broken the threshold. But I mean, the question here is appellant, does appellant have the right to be secure in his home or not? When he decides that at that point, he's closing the door. He didn't want to come out and talk to the police. So he didn't pull a gun out. He didn't threaten them in any way. He didn't yell at them in any way. He simply was closing the door. And does he have a right to do that or not? If he doesn't have a right to do it, then I think that there's a much different constitutional issues that we're dealing with here. But he's in his home. And at that point, they don't know who he is. He's not doing anything to the law enforcement. I think he's well within his right to close the door. There's three officers there. They can secure him in the home at that point. If they want to go try to get a search warrant at that point, they can certainly do that. But I think in my brief, and I've said it before, there was no basis at that point for a search warrant. There was just simply a homicide in the alleyway, and then there's a house three doors down with the door open. There's no other indication whatsoever that would support a probable cause finding for a search warrant of a home. If they wanted to knock on the door and ask him to come out, but they didn't knock and ask him to come out, they pulled their guns out on him and said, get out of the house, put your hands up. Much different than in Lemieux.
So I got a chance to ask about the timeline. Sorry. I understand that the gunshot was reported around 12:47 a.m. I think I have that right. You might want to look at your notes. So what's the response time? Do we have that in the record? So at what, how, you know, when did all this happen in the context of when were the shots reported?
Your Honor, I do not recall exactly the time frame, but I think the shot spotter came approximately 12:45. Mm-hmm. And if my, it's been a while since I read the transcripts, but I wanted to say that it was in the 10 to 15 minute range when Sergeant Carlson, who was the main officer, was the individual that, was called onto the scene. I don't recall exactly, but
isn't that a factor, counsel? I mean, I don't hear you talking about it, and it concerns me. I mean, the immediacy of all of this. This is not just a homicide victim found in an alley, which is very concerning and alarming. But we also have the immediacy of it. The shots were just fired, and then we have the vehicle nearby with the doors open. We have the back door open, and the suspicious behavior of the appellant. So what would you have the officers do? I mean, I hear you say it's okay for the officer to ask questions of the defendant, but that obviously didn't get the officer anything in this case. So then what? They have to just stop and go get a warrant? I mean, if that's your position, I understand, but I just want to make sure they have to just stop as soon as the door gets closed, go get a warrant. Is that right?
Well, in this context, Your Honor, you stated the suspicious action by the appellant. Well, the appellant didn't do anything suspicious. The appellant didn't know other than closing the door.
Show his hands when he was asked to by a uniformed officer, right?
Right. As he's inside of his home without a firearm, without any sort of threats whatsoever to law enforcement. So what are the law enforcement supposed to do? I mean, if there had been more to this case, such as we saw someone run into that home, or we saw blood, or we saw shell casings leading up to the home, they heard things in the home that could have been concerning. Those are different situations, but that's not what happened here. Law enforcement simply saw an open door, thought it was suspicious, and walked up to it. And it wasn't for a, investigatory casual encounter. They went there with the guns drawn. The vehicle, obviously, that's in the alleyway. That's not inside of the home. That's a little bit of a different situation. But again, there's no blood. There's no shell casings. It's just simply the car door is open.
by them. You're losing me a little bit. Are you suggesting the officer should not have had their guns drawn?
Your Honor, there's three officers. Okay. And the purpose of this case is not to teach officer training, but obviously there's three officers. One could certainly knock on the door and see if there's anyone inside the home that will come and talk with them. There could certainly have cover behind them of officers that have firearms handy, ready to go. Obviously, officers are uniformed and they are loaded with firearms all the time. But to simply be going up to the house with their guns out, and once they see someone come around the corner, again, he's not done anything. He's not being threatening to them. He's not yelling at them. He doesn't have blood on his clothes. He doesn't seem, nothing else is there. They immediately, guns are up, pointed at him. Put up your hands, show your hands, come out. He chose to exercise his right to close the door. That's what he did. And at that point, officers needed to go get a search warrant if they are knock on the door or go get a search warrant for any other purpose. They did not have any other indication at that point that there was an emergency going on inside of that home. They did not know that whether appellant was connected to this shooting or not. They did not know if that home was connected with that shooting or not. And the testimony presented by the officers at the hearing was clear. They had no idea. They were simply walking up there to see if there was some other indication. And I'll reiterate the point. There was nothing leading from the homicide to the vehicle, to the home, that would have potentially led, a line or a string of evidence that would have led them into that home. I see I'm out of time. I would reserve some time for my rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
You do have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. So there we go. We have reset the clock. We're ready to hear from you, counsel, for responding.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Nicole Cornell. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney appearing on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this matter. This court should affirm the district court's denial of appellant's motion to suppress because officer's brief limited entry into the rear door threshold of 3535 Bryant to seize appellant at the murder scene was permissible under the emergency aid exception and totality of the circumstances exception to the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment. And based on the court's questions, I plan to keep my comments brief, but if I may quickly run through a few factual discrepancies that the panel has brought up so far. I believe it was Judge Bratfold who asked what time the shot spotter actually indicated a shot was fired at the residence. And I just double checked the complaint, 12:49. Sergeant Carlson estimated that the shot spotter came in about 1 a.m. And by the time appellant appeared at his back door at 3535 Bryant, it was 1:12 and about 20 seconds. So that's how fast the facts of this investigation and the circumstances surrounding the homicide and possible burglary had been unfolding, which this panel has already pointed out.
Ms. Cornell, can I ask you a question to follow up one of the last points Mr. Anderson made?
Sure.
I believe it was related to what he said. If number one, you agree that at the point they make contact with the appellant, they have no probable cause to believe he was related to the shooting. Would that be correct?
Well, Your Honor, let's clarify the particular point in time.
Well, I mean, the point they first see him, did they have any, I'm assuming you agree that at so far at that point, before any conduct or words of the appellant, they did not know he was related to the shooting, hence why we're talking about emergency exception, because if they had reason to believe, they'd get a warrant and we wouldn't be here. Is that a fair summary of the situation? They don't know who's living there.
I want to make sure I understand exactly what you're saying. So the officers approach the back door and flank it. So they're waiting there for just moments, maybe 2 minutes, between 1:10 and 1:12. They hear someone inside. You can hear that on the body camera. Everyone says they hear people and occupants inside, one or more. So they're waiting for backup to arrive before they can do anything else, before they can do a knock and talk, before they can pursue any other investigation. So they hear someone coming, and then they see someone coming, and then that person did not listen to their commands, then tried to close the door. So at that point in time, certainly that individual was a suspect.
But I want to talk prior to that. My point I'm getting at is, would you agree that that's what I wanted to get at? The judge seemed to make it very clear that it was the emergency care exception that allowed for the seizure ultimately. It allowed for the entry onto the property. Mm-hmm. It allowed for the inquiry. So my point I'm getting at is that would imply that there is no probable cause yet to believe he's related in any way. But because of the short time, because of the facts we've already talked about, it was reasonable for them, and I think Mr. Anderson agreed, to walk up to inquire. Correct?
Correct. Then I don't disagree.
Okay. So my question then hypothetically is this. So since they don't yet connect him to it, if he shows his hands and they say, we want to talk to you, would he be free, notwithstanding the officer saying he was not free to go, to say, no, thank you. I'd rather not. You officers have a good evening. I'm sorry, there's a dead body down the hall, but I'm going to bed. Would he be free legally at that stage to do that? The difference being he's cooperating fully, whereas here the officers seem to rely heavily, as did the judge, on his refusal to put his hands down, which raises suspicion, number one, and his shutting the door raises suspicion, number two. But if he did it politely and cooperatively, you still believe they could have forced their way in and brought him out as they did? And if so, under what basis?
Your Honor, I apologize. I want to make sure I'm really understanding your hypothetical before I respond. So are you asking if appellant put his hands up and walked outside, would he be seized?
Here, the officers testified here, and the judge really put great weight. This is an exception that allowed for their putting the foot in the door when he refused to show his hand. So that was concern number one to the officers. Mm-hmm. Concern number two is he's forcing the door shut. Mm-hmm. So if you took away those two concerns, is that all I'm asking you, would you then agree they would not have a right to forcibly enter absent a warrant because there's no longer, or do you believe that there could be further inquiry at that stage?
My position is there definitely is reason for further inquiry to pursue any avenue to get information from the only individual they see at 1 o'clock in the morning with nobody else around next to a murder victim.
Well, let me certainly bring it from a different direction. And I apologize, my question not so good. Would you agree under the emergency exception, number one, what was the emergency here that they were investigating in this house under the emergency exception? In Lemieux, it was burglary, potential assault. And then number two, would you agree that once they obtain enough information to believe there's no longer an emergency in that house, they would have to end it?
Your first question is, what are the emergencies?
Yeah.
The emergencies are twofold. First, you have the shot spotter and the dying or deceased individual laying in the alley. Then you have suspicious circumstances leading directly to the open back door of a lit house at 3535 Bryant. So emergency one is clearly the homicide. So during a homicide investigation, when officers immediately respond, they are supposed to and allowed to search the area for either murderers, for additional victims.
But I just want to clarify though, the deceased body is not related to the emergency exception to go onto this into this property and into the house, I assume. It's because of the door and the excursion, and otherwise they could be going into all the houses along the alley.
So that might be a factor, but
the emergency exception to a warrant, like in Lemieux, is do they have a right to go into a particular house and then thereafter complete whatever they do, right?
Perhaps you're getting at the second prong of the emergency exception analysis here. Is there something akin to probable cause connecting the emergency or emergencies with the house? So emergency one is the murder. There is no gunman on the scene and no gun there. So police know that they need to investigate for a particular killer or a particular weapon. This is a dangerous situation that occurred only moments before. So that's emergency number one. That is connected to the house because there is a very clear line of investigation leading right to the open back door. You have the murder victim laying in the alley, feet from this open abandoned excursion. with the driver's door open, keys discarded. This is not a situation where you're unloading groceries at 1 a.m. The driver's door is ajar, keys are abandoned, right next to feet from an open gate of a backyard, leading directly to a lit up house with an open rear back door. Sergeant Carlson testified in all his 15 years of experience, he has never seen such a clear line of investigation reveal itself so quickly at a murder scene.
And Mr. Cornell, I think Mr. Anderson, I think he ended up agreeing today there was a reasonable way to go on the property. What I want to focus on is what happened at the house, because to have an entry into that house, you would agree there has to be an emergency aid to someone in that house.
Sure.
Exception. My question really gets to this point is they relied heavily, as the judge did, on his non-cooperation, which then ratchets up. But assuming you take all that away, what sort of questions would they then, if they wanted to have a discussion, say, yeah, I'll visit with you, would end the emergency aid so that they would then walk away?
Well, Your Honor, the police needed to determine how exactly and to what extent this house was leading from that direct line to the deceased body in the alley. That is what they're supposed to do as police officers. And perhaps if I'm backtracking a little bit to the other emergency of a possible burglary at the scene as well, Judge Chu specifically found that it was reasonable for the officers to believe that there was additional crimes happening within the home or around the home, considering the dead body and signs of a burglary. On officers' body-worn camera, they specifically discussed they had simultaneous calls for a burglary and a murder, all in that same area. You have a discarded car, discarded keys, open door that was lit up, no other abandoned cars in the area, no other lit up homes in the area, right next to a dead body. Officers would have been derelict in their duty if they hadn't approached the door and attempted to investigate further. And I must reiterate how fast this investigation has unfolded. And I apologize if I'm beating a dead horse. The panel is already well aware of how quickly this investigation unfolded. But officers did not even get a chance to do a knock and talk, did not even get a chance to call out to any of the individuals within the house because they were still waiting for backup officers to surround the house. And that gets sort of toward the totality of the circumstances factors under Dorman, whether or not it was reasonable for whichever occupant inside to escape. And they definitely could have if the home was not surrounded, which there's no evidence that the home was surrounded at this time. So to get back to your original question, there's several emergencies here that make the emergency aid exception apply to 3535 Bryant. And with my few moments remaining, I won't belabor the points that I've already made in my brief, but I would like to emphasize the purpose behind the emergency aid exception to the warrant requirement. And it is respondents' position that this is the exact type of emergency aid requirement, exactly the type of emergency aid circumstances that do not require a warrant to check on people that were at 3535 Bryant. And the main idea here is, again, were the officers derelict in their duty if they did nothing? And I think the answer is they would have been derelict in their duty if they didn't seize appellant and assess the safety and welfare of the occupants that they could hear inside 3535 Bryant, considering the murder victim was found in the alley behind their home, behind and two doors down, to be most accurate. The other emphasis here is that officers very obviously limited their entry onto the curtilage and into the home only to the extent necessary for the safety of the officers and to control the scene. This is a murder scene. The entry was focused and measured, like it was in cases affirming other district courts' denial of motions to suppress. And Sergeant Carlson's body-worn camera clearly shows he instructed his officers, nobody go in till we get this place surrounded and we can clear it for the safety of the officers, and then in pursuit of the investigation into the murder. Additionally, the inquiry regarding emergency aid exception has to do with the reasonable inferences officers can draw under the circumstances. Here, the officers acted reasonably, objectively, reasonably, and inferred that something happened in the alley, a murder, that led directly to something happening with the occupants that they could hear inside this house. Opposing counsel stated repeatedly that they didn't see or hear anything inside the house while they were flanking the back door, and the record does not support that, neither does the body-worn camera. They could hear someone was inside the house, one or more individuals, and they were correct. Additionally, the body-worn camera shows that officers thought this is so weird to have a direct line linking the murder victim to the back of this house that they needed to investigate. And again, Sergeant Carlson has never seen such a clear line in his 15 years of experience. The realities and practicalities of how this unfolded was the shot spotter at 12:49, and then appellant appeared at his back door at approximately 1:12:20, 20 or 22 seconds. So again, two options here: let the door close, cease the investigation, possibly leaving all the occupants of 3535 in peril. That is not the appropriate choice that police should be making in these circumstances. Instead, they should stop the appellant from closing the door, as they did in, as other police did in the unprecedented decision of State versus Gunther. And although it's unprecedented, it applies Reese, it applies Lemieux, it leads to the same result that this panel should find today, which is to affirm the district court. And the other option is to let the door close and leave them in peril. So officers are allowed to seize the person in that instance, and case law, not just on probable cause, but on reasonable suspicion, where there are ambiguities in an investigation, officers are required to, they would be derelict in their duty not to, resolve the ambiguity for the purposes of public safety, especially in the event of a murder emergency. I realize my time is almost up. I respectfully ask that this court affirm, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Anything further from the panel? Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. And we're resetting the clock for rebuttal. So with that, Mr. Anderson, you can go ahead with rebuttal when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, in order for the emergency aid exception to apply, there must be reasonable grounds that there's an emergency at that property, in that home. The fact that there was a homicide in general is an emergency, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that has anything to do with that home. Again, all of the officers testified. We had absolutely no idea if there was a connection between the homicide and that home. Yes, they may have found it odd or suspicious, but that does not require an emergency. When they went up to the door, they could hear people in the house, but there wasn't glass breaking, there wasn't yelling, there wasn't fighting. There was nothing that indicated there was some sort of an emergency going on in the home at the time. So I think counsel for the state, when they say leave someone in peril, no one was in peril, or there certainly was no evidence that someone was in peril in that home at the time. And just a final point here, had they let the door close, that would not have just ended the investigation. It's now they'd say, oh, door's closed, see you later, I guess we're done. They had three officers, they could have surrounded the home, they could have gotten a search warrant. They could have continued, the investigation does not just go away because he closes the door. The officers could have sought a search warrant, they could have attempted to knock on the door and talk to him. They could have done other things other than kick the door in and grab him and pull him out of his home. With that being said, Your Honor, I believe that the district court erred, and I would ask this court to reverse and remand for further with further instructions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions from the panel? Okay, very good. Our thanks to both lawyers in this case. This matter was well briefed and well argued. We really appreciate hearing from you, and it very much helps us as we deliberate and make a decision. So with this matter is submitted to this court for a decision. We will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe.